So just while Stuart's getting everything organised, welcome to the second kind of health session. We're running a little bit late because the other session was running late. So second session of the day, we're already behind time. I'd like to introduce Stuart and Ignatius. Stuart standing up, Ignatius sitting down. Stuart's the head of the Deloitte Actuarial Health Practice. He's been an actuary for many years. I probably won't go into too many. He's been consulting for slightly less. 30-odd years in Australia, the UK and other overseas jurisdictions. Originally a life insurance actuary, I think, Stuart, before you moved into health?
Superannuation first.
So jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Ignatius, also an actuary with Deloitte. I'm not sure how long you've been there for, but a number of years now.
About four years.
And what they're here to talk to us about today is the ageing health costs, or health costs for ageing people. The presentation, there was no paper, just the presentation was on the website, I think, on Friday. I know I didn't have the chance to find it. So the presentation itself is quite large. I think what I'd suggest, based on Stuart's input, is follow the presentation, have the discussion as we go today. If you're really interested in particular detail, it'll be on the website, so rather than stopping, you know, for each of the 50 or 60 or 70 pages that Stuart's going to try and talk us through, we might defer some of that. But if I can hand over to Stuart, then we'll take it from there.
I told Ian we'll take 25 minutes.
22 is what I was told.
Yeah, I did. I'm giving myself a margin. Okay, ageing health costs. And what we will be focusing on today is affordability of those ageing health costs for older people. Bit of background first of all. Most people in this room will be familiar with the idea that health costs go up as you get older. That's a graph from AIHW for total health costs. If you decompose it into other types of health costs, it still looks the same, gets bigger as you get older. So the graph on the right there is New South Wales hospitals. On the left, it's pharmaceutical benefit scheme drugs. Could have put up a graph for Medicare costs, which would show the same pattern, although maybe a little bit flatter. And if we go offshore and look at other countries, it's the same. The older you are, the more your health treatments cost the entire system. So this is a whole bunch of European countries' graphs. Easy, we all knew that. Combine with that the extent of out-of-pocket costs. And in Australia, on the latest figures, 24.6, nearly a quarter of our total health system costs are being paid by individuals. 17% of that in the form of actual out-of-pocket costs, like the money you pay when you go to the GP or when you buy a prescription drug from pharmaceutical chemist, and deductibles, etc., if you do end up in hospital. The other 7% is the actual cost that it comes out of my income when I buy private health insurance. There's another 3% that the government pays, but it actually costs me 7% to buy the private health insurance cover. So a quarter of the costs are being paid by individuals. Just for perspective, 43% for the Commonwealth government, 25% for state and local governments, and the 8%, the pink little slice of pie down the bottom there, is others like workers' comp. We're just going to focus on that 24.6%. That proportion is growing at roughly the same pace as the entire system health costs, so there's not any indication over the last 10 years that the burden of actual cash outlays is becoming easier for people. Those graphs are pretty flat. And in Australia, and here's where we get to the nub of this, the older you are, the more your actual expenditure goes on health costs. So we've got a couple of graphs there, one from the Household Expenditure Survey, breaking people up into lifestyle groupings. On the top, you've got a single person aged under 25. On the bottom, you've got a single person aged 65 and over. And just above that, a couple aged 65 and over. And as you can see, the proportion of weekly expenditure going on health is bigger for the older people. So not only does health cost more as you get older, but the proportion that you're actually paying for yourself gets bigger. Another way of looking at that, this is a wonderful graph. There are grey lines here, and you
There.
If you do look at it by source of income, it tells you the same picture that... I can't play with that. If your income is primarily superannuation or investments, then your proportion of weekly expenditure or the weekly expenditure on health is up around the $80 to $100 level.
That's up there.
If your income is from wages or business income,
it's down here.
And rather comfortingly, if your income is mainly from government pensions or allowances, then your weekly health expenditure is down at that level, reflecting the various safety nets that do exist for that segment of society. We're not alone in that, so we've got some figures there for the USA. I'm going to move on because the real question is, if health costs keep taking a larger proportion of GDP, how will retired people afford it? Right? Are we going to find that the cost curve growing up and the bigger pie together lead to those purple lines where for the retired people the out-of-pocket costs that they have just heads off to the right? Look a little bit about how other countries deal with this affordability issue. What is it about their systems that has a structure that deals with this? Look briefly, and I do mean briefly, at those countries, UK, Netherlands, Singapore, Australia, USA. So in the UK, pretty easy, very comprehensive national health system, not quite covering dental care and a few bits and pieces at the edges, but basically they allow retirees to afford their out-of-pocket health expenditure by huge use of government funding. That's the message from that system. Move to the Netherlands, which has recently rethought its whole health financing structure, brought in a compulsory insurance scheme from 2006, January 2006. What they've chosen to do is see the third bullet point down, or first bullet point, compulsory for everybody, third bullet point down, community-rated, various levels of expenditure, but if you can't afford that, the government will help you. And 5.5 million out of the 16.5 million population have received some form of government support for this insurance scheme in the year that it first came into being. So the key structural elements there, community rating and government funding. Singapore. We take questions at the end, so we stick to our 22 minutes. Remember the question. Dave's got a question, everyone. So with Singapore, different approach again. Compulsory MediSave, saving scheme over your working lifetime purely to pay health costs. Strong encouragement to purchase health insurance, initially from the national base level scheme, but also from private insurers. All that health insurance, as it is in, all that health insurance is age-rated premiums, right? So if you think of the age cost curve, difficult, except that people have built up MediSave accounts and the premiums are paid out of their MediSave accounts. So effectively, individuals are pre-funding through their life the costs of health. So the two, and also in the lowest class wards, government pays 80% of the cost of the hospital wards. So there's a strong element of government funding and a very strong element of pre-funding in the two structural elements there. Come to Australia, I'll just skip over Australia. We have Medicare, we have community rating, government funding and community rating, the two elements. In the USA, very strongly oriented towards employer funding. So my mother-in-law, who lives in Moline, Illinois, home of John Deere tractors, is still getting her healthcare costs by John Deere, even though she hasn't worked for them for 10 or 15 years. And when they look like they want to cut back on that, all sorts of legal mechanisms cut into place that says you can't. So firstly, employment-based, but secondly, there is Medicare, the government-funded scheme as well. And there's a little box there. There's a survey of consumer attitudes. Seniors are two or three times more likely than others to feel they can handle the financial uncertainty of healthcare costs. That's a survey from Deloitte. But when you look at the proportion overall who are satisfied, there's about 30-40% who are satisfied and the rest are dissatisfied. So it's a bit like saying the glass is 40% full. That quick look at the different systems could do that in a lot more detail, but there's four different things, and the different countries have typically got a mix of two of them, and the two are often different. Community rating, government funding, employer support, and pre-funding. Okay, so we're going to switch now to look at what's been happening in Australia and what the mix of government policies and private sector endeavours have been doing about older people's ability to afford what they have to pay for health in Australia. And I'm going to pass to Ignatius for that.
Okay, so basically there is this part of the system in Australian social policy in superannuation which could be used to meet old age health costs. So we wanted to see how well that actually coped in terms of dealing with old age health costs. So we've got these two models that we've produced, the Deloitte super model, which projects average superannuation balances over time, and also we've done a projection of expected present value of future lifetime health costs. And the interesting thing is actually comparing the two and seeing how that trends over time. So this first graph, I'm just going to take you through the results of the Deloitte supermodel. This is in real terms the average super balance for a male age 65 at various points in time in the future. So the way to read this graph is the first column within each of the different fund types. The first column on the left is for 2008, and the far rightmost column is for 2028. So you can see that for overall there is an increasing trend. In 2008, the average balance is about $300,000, and this is expected to more than double to $600,000 in 2028. I'd also just like to focus on the industry fund type, which the reason for that is we believe that the industry fund is a little bit more representative of lower to middle income earners. And so that helps us answer the question for those people who are more disadvantaged in our society, how well does super actually help them meet their old age health costs? And for them, in 2008, we're saying that the average balance is just under $200,000, but by 2028, this goes up to $500,000. And this is in real terms, which means that we have deflated this using a health price index. I'm just going to also show you what this means in terms of the real rate of growth in super. I'm not going to spend too long on this slide except to say that over time there is expected to be a reducing rate of growth, and the reason for that is as more people have spent more of their working lives under the current superannuation arrangements, the growth rate will slow down as a result. For overall, you can see that for the 5 years after 2008, the rate of growth is around 3%, but over 20 years, the rate of growth is a lot lower, just under 1%. For industry fund type, which is the second one from the left, this is 6% for 5 years after 2008, and on average for the 20 years from 2008, this drops dramatically to about 1%. So now that I've presented to you the results of the Deloitte supermodel, just like to compare that with expected present value of future health costs. And I'll just take you quickly through also the actual projection that we did. To start with, we needed an average cost in health And for that, we've looked at the Household Expenditure Survey for 2003-04. And this focuses purely on the health fund and the individual component of the non-government part of the total health costs, I guess you could say. And for them, a person who is in a household where the reference age of the person is 65 and over, the average person spends about $1,300 per year on health. And we've called that personal health expenses. And how does this actually compare with some other measures? If we're looking across all types of households, this is $939, so significantly lower, which is what you would expect. But the actual, in terms of our projection, what we've used is a figure of $1,100, and in the next slide I'll show you how we actually arrived at that figure. So, as you would expect, for people over 65, well, for health costs will generally vary with age, and for what we've got here on this graph is the flat curve represents the household expenditure survey result of $1,300. The blue line, which is our actual base assumption, is an average of the red and yellow line. The yellow line represents the varying costs from PHI costs, which is more or less a proxy for hospitalisation costs, which we think is probably at the more extreme end in terms of how much variation there is in the health costs for people after age 65. So in terms of our base scenario, we've basically just taken an average of the two. And that's how we arrive at the $1,100 for a 65-year-old. We've also used a real health growth rate applied on that starting figure, and our assumption is 3.6%, and this is based on the growth rate in average health expenditure. It comes from the AIHW, and it's for the 10 years up to 2007. And so on this table, we're just showing some comparative statistics. Recurrent health expenditure per person was about 2.8% from the same source, and probably the main thing that I'd like to mention is that the 3.6% is at the higher end of our comparative statistics. So we think that our projections are at a more conservative end of the possible outcomes. We also just did a very quick comparison with a paper that John Goss wrote, and in that paper he's actually done a slightly different type of, well, very different type of projection with varying rates of real growth. The interesting thing is the highest rate of growth assumed in his projection does actually get quite close to our assumption. So, but again, our assumption is higher than his. And so this kind of reinforces the fact that we think our projections are more on the conservative side. So that was the construct of the projection, and this is actually the result. This is for a 65-year-old at various points in time in the future, and the one on the far left is for 2008. And what this is saying is that the expected present value of a person's health expenses for the rest of their life is about $30,000. This increases in real terms to close to $70,000 by 2028. And when we say in real terms, what we've used is a discount rate based on the real earning rate from the Deloitte supermodel. So the interesting question is how that actually compares with the super balances at the same points in time. So what we've got here is for various different types of funds, superannuation funds. I'm just going to focus on overall and industry funds. Overall, it's basically just an average of all of the superannuation that's been modelled. And for them, you can see that there is a kind of gradual increase over time, from just under 10% in 2008 to just over 10%. So this is the present value of health costs as a percentage of super, I should add. So a slightly increasing burden on old age health costs for the average person. The other one I'd like to focus on is the industry fund type, which is the second one from the left. And for them, there is a decreasing trend over time, so a reducing burden. And for them, it's about 17 to 18% in 2008, and this falls to about 13% in 2028, so a fairly significant drop. We also performed some sensitivities, and we found that the real rate of cost growth is quite sensitive to the results. What we did was test a plus or minus 0.6% to the real rate of growth assumption. And so what you're seeing here is the 3% assumption, the low growth assumption. And again, I'm just going to focus on industry and overall. So overall on the far right shows that health expenses as a percentage of super is fairly constant over time. In fact, it's pretty much the same if you compare 2008 and 2028. Again, for industry fund, it's a decreasing trend, but that trend is even more steep than before, as you would expect. So just over 15% in 2008 and a little bit over 10% by 2028. So now I'll just show you the other extreme, which is the high growth assumption of 4.2%. And you can see there's this fairly stark contrast for overall fund, which is now showing a clear upward trend, so a clear increasing burden on health costs. So it goes from just over 10% to about 13 to 14% by 2028. For industry fund type, it's still showing a decreasing trend, but the trend is a lot less pronounced than the other two scenarios previously. So this is my final slide, and it shows the three different scenarios on the same graph. And the key things to note are, well, first of all, for the high growth assumption, obviously the health cost as a percentage of super is the highest, and lowest for low growth. The other interesting thing is that they all show a decreasing trend. This is for industry fund types, but the trend is a lot less pronounced for high growth and much more so for low growth. The final point I'd just like to make is that we are dealing with average personal health costs, so we've made no attempt to kind of understand how people in the lower economic backgrounds might spend super on health. But even having noted that, using these average rates, it's still a significant burden, we believe. When you're talking about anywhere between 13 to 20% of your superannuation assets need to be used for health costs, that's a fairly significant amount. So just like to pass back to Stuart.
Okay. So what? Firstly, as Ignatius said, caveats on these figures. We've looked at the averages, not the distributions. Secondly, we've focused on superannuation, and when people retire, they have more than superannuation to tide them over. Why have we done that? Because they're both very large areas of government policy, and it seems like a sensible thing to take a holistic view of those two areas. And in fact, it's just taking a systematic approach to how retired people can afford their costs of health is an important question in its own right. The simple projections we've done show that superannuation policy is helping to make health more affordable, possibly, for one key segment of society, being the people whose dominant superannuation assets will be in an industry fund. It doesn't show us, though, whether the distribution of outcomes across society is going to be acceptable overall. So possibly there's enough money going in to the right sector, but is it being distributed properly? Don't know. If it's not being distributed properly, then that suggests that there is either an insurance or a pre-funding need in our society, and that that will be met either by a piece of government policy over the ensuing years, or else by a piece of private enterprise financial support. That's probably the key so what from our paper. So with that, we'll hand back to our chairman, and I'll put the slide back with the results we want most to focus on.